Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody is having a fantastic day today. Actually having some nice hot weather down here in Florida, which is pretty usual. And how are you doing today, Dad?
I'm doing great. I'm doing absolutely wonderful. It's nice and toasty. And I was outside cutting a deck today. Leaky pool again. It's just, you know, you're smart, Austin, not having a swimming pool. I wish I didn't have a swimming pool. All they do is leak. and you think, well, what does that have to do with the news? Well, that newsflash, pools leak. There you go. That was my first opening story. And it's so funny because sometimes you get a pool that you have for 40 years and it never leaks. And all of a sudden now you have one that you're constantly doing repairs on, which seems to be the case with me. By the way, good news here. Landmark U.S. court decision rules that privacy under the Fourth Amendment also applies to smart meters. This is a huge deal, guys. The Seventh U.S. Circuit Court handed down a landmark opinion that the Fourth Amendment protects energy consumption data collected by smart meters because the data reveals intimate details about personal activities in the home that would be unavailable to the government without a physical search. The court held that residents have a reasonable expectation of privacy in this data and that the government's access of it constitutes a search. More than 40% of American households now have a smart meter, and the number will likely reach 80% within a couple of years. Law enforcement agencies are already trying to obtain the data from energy companies without warrants. Now, why would this apply to this? Let me give you an example. If someone's growing pot in their basement, and they're using a lot of electricity, and they want to see what kind of energy consumption the house is having, the smart meter will read that all out to you and to the anybody who wants to have it. So guys, if you have a smart meter, don't grow pot in your basement. Better yet, don't grow pot in your basement at all. This is in a state where you can grow pot in your basement and be legal. I mean, don't be getting yourself into trouble doing stuff like that. What do you think, Oz?
Well, no, I brought that up before to a few people because the scary part about that is there are a lot of aspects of it, of when you have the highest amount of usage in your house, when you have peaks, when you have downtime. And the truth is, what's supposed to be secured in your house, in your belongings, on your person, is supposed to be considered basically yours. You're not supposed to have it searched or taken from you. And the fact that they need to get that now, I'm very glad to see that. One thing that I thought was interesting, if you guys have seen this now, the NPR report, which was essentially done to figure out whether or not the aspect of the school shooting numbers that was released by the U.S. Education Department was accurate or not, was brought out. I saw this earlier this week. NPR reported on the high number of school shootings alleged by the U.S. Department of Education. The 240 school shootings detailed in the department's report on the 2015 to 2016 school year was significantly higher than any other estimate. So NPR, with the assistance of a nonprofit group, Child Trends, began to do what journalists do, and they collect the data. Over a period of several months, they contacted every school. What NPR found was startling. More than two-thirds of these report instances never happened. They said they went on to say here, we were able to confirm just 11 reported incidents, either directly with the school or through media reports. In 161 cases, schools or districts attested that no incident took place or couldn't confirm one. In at least four cases, we found something did happen. However, it did not even meet the government's parameter for a school shooting. Then another about 25% of the schools would not even respond to the inquiry. And then in one strange case, they found that actually an active shooter drill with blank ammunition, training ammunition, was used during a school shooter drill and was listed as a school shooting by one of the schools. Now, the weird thing about all of this is, remember when this report came out, the school district, U.S. Department of Education came out and said, we've had 240 school shootings that year. This is an insane amount. You know, and you start thinking about the numbers on that, and you're like, dude, we have to have a school shooting literally more than every other day. I mean, there's only 365 days in a year. There's basically every single school year, especially if you exclude summers, there's basically a school shooting every single day in the United States. Those numbers didn't add up to me at all. And so when these guys, NPR, reached out to reach this, they found that these numbers were massively bloated. Not only were they bloated, they were significantly flawed. In one area, you know, like I said, with them using a training, active shooter training drill to constitute that as a school shooting, another 160 schools said they didn't have any reports of a school shooting. Then there's been some that I've seen, too, that have been like an officer negligent discharge in the parking lot where he accidentally fired his weapon outside of his vehicle. That constituted a school shooting. Then there's been numerous ones that were reported where a child brought a gun to school, so it was a gun-related incident, and the child was basically expelled. That was put down as a gun-related school shooting incident. These numbers are highly flawed and basically not accurate at all. And the crazy part about this was when we see numbers like this and with the media doing what they did and coming out now and trying to slam everybody and say, oh, this is why we need gun laws, this is why we need more gun restrictions, this is why kids can't have access to guns, this is bizarre because we know for a fact when we start looking at this stuff, these numbers are not accurate. Now, what makes it even crazier is yesterday, NPR had Sean Malone, who's basically a colleague, post the article on Facebook, which carried the headline, "The School Shootings That Weren't," to thousands of his Facebook followers on Tuesday is what it was. It was flagged on Wednesday and removed. They stated, "We removed this post because it looked like spam and does not follow our community standards," even though it was a very well thought out, very well documented NPR report showing that there were not 240 school shootings in 2015 to 2016. There were really along the lines of only a few dozen at the most, if they could even get accurate numbers from the schools that would not report to them, Dad. So I thought that was interesting. Again, we're seeing more false news from the mainstream media, and then when an article from NPR gets posted on Facebook, Facebook takes it down for spam and not following their community standards, which is even not mind-boggling because we know Facebook does this, but again shows you how they're intentionally trying to manipulate everything that we think, hear, and see all the time.
Well, you know what's interesting about this, Austin? You know, when they don't give you the real data, I mean, you could have a guy in a parking lot in a school who sees a rattlesnake and discharges a weapon and it goes down to a school shooting. I'm just letting you guys know. You don't know when they won't give you the actual data as to what happened with the shooting, and they refuse to answer the questions of the surveys. How do you know somebody didn't backfire a doggone car with an old carburetor? It backfired going down the road by the school. Now that's another school shooting. I mean, you know, you can't prove anything. So I mean, anybody can say anything, and anybody can make anything up, but you got to verify it. Yesterday, I was Harrison, your brother, pasted on his Facebook page. It was a really interesting thing from Sheriff Grady Judd, and it was dealing with the Uber driver who got shot, who basically shot the guy here in Polk County. And what happened is an Uber driver was driving around with this person in the car. Apparently, he did something wrong when he was driving. Some guy at the red light stopped and jumped out and ran over and told the Uber driver he was going to shoot him. And the Uber driver, and the guy had like a shiny object. It was his cell phone in his hand. And the Uber driver immediately discharged and killed him. And the Uber driver walked away. His passenger saw it all happen. He heard the guy threaten to kill the Uber driver. And Sheriff Grady Judge said he will not be charged. He said the Uber driver will not be charged. He goes, this is a perfect example of why we have stand your own ground rules and laws in the state of Florida. He goes, you can't run up to somebody's car with something in your hand saying that you're going to shoot them and not think that they're not going to believe you. Period. And, you know, see, this is the problem that people have. And this is why, and Sheriff Grady Judd, he was so poignant, and he said, look, he goes, here's the deal. Just leave people alone. Don't mess with people. Just leave them alone. You don't have to threaten them. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Just leave people. Let them, like you said, like you also, you always say, let them go freely and unmolested on their way. And don't be bothering people. You know, and that's what I always tell people. So just leave me alone. Yeah, just leave me alone. I remember one time I was in my car, and I think I told you guys a story. I'll tell it to you again real quick. And there was a truck in front of me, a semi. There were two left-hand. I was on a four-lane road. Two lanes were going straight. Two lanes were turning left. It's over on Cypress Gardens, 17, Austin. You know where it is. And people are turning left on the Cypress Gardens road. There's two lanes. And the right-hand lane or the turn lane was a large semi-truck with pallets in it. Pallets on it. They were strapped. They were, all the pallets were leaning like they're about to fall off. And there's a guy underneath the back of the trailer with a bottle jack. And the basically, he was jacking up his trailer. Apparently, he was having axle problems. He was stopped right in the middle of the road, and I saw him. So I thought, well, I'll park at the back of his tractor trailer because I don't want him to have to breathe my carbon monoxide. I see him. Most people don't see him. I'm just going to stop. And so the light had just turned red, so I stopped. I couldn't go anywhere. And then all of a sudden, a car comes up behind me, pickup truck. And the guy gets right up on my bumper. Finally, he lays out on the horn because he wants me to pull forward. Now, remember, the light's green. The light's red. It's not moving. The light's completely red. The guy's under the truck. And I'm just sitting there, and the guy's blowing his horn. I told Harrison, I said, if the guy's an idiot, he's going to get out of the truck, and he's going to come up here and start screaming and threaten me. Harrison, you think so? I said, yeah, he acts like an idiot. I said, he's probably on some type of meds. And I said, we'll see what happens. But I'm not going to pull up there because I'm not going to sit beside the truck in case the pallets fall off and lands on top of the car, or so he doesn't have to breathe the carbon monoxide. And sure enough, here the guy comes. Oh, I was all bowed up, you know, all red-faced with hysteria, screaming and yelling and hollering. And he gets right to the front door of the car, and right on the side of the window of the car is a big sign that says Glock, safe action pistols. Big picture of a gun right there on the side of my car, right on the window. And he comes, he walks up screaming and yelling. He looks at the car, and he sees the Glock picture. And he stands there, and he stops yelling. And I roll the window down. I said, can I help you? And he goes, what are you doing? You need to pull forward another 50 feet. And I said, why? The light's still red. And I said, and don't you see the guy underneath the tractor trailer? I said, don't you see him down there? He says, oh, I didn't see him down there. I said, well, yeah, man, I saw him. And I said, buddy, I said, you need to calm down. you just need to calm down. I said, this ain't going to help you, buddy. If something's going to happen to you walking up somebody's car one day like this. And I bust my window back up, and he yelled something. He said something stupid comment. I forgot what it was. And I sat right there, and Harris said, well, how'd you know that? I said, well, because certain people have certain actions, and they never grow up. When you want to be 12 or 13 the rest of your life, it has problems and ramifications associated with it. And chances are you're not going to make it to old age without getting shot or beaten up or maced or pepper sprayed in the face or basically assaulted by a group of people if you act like that. And so this is what I've learned over the years, is that people that are crazy or when they're on medications, guys. You know, because he may be having a really bad day. Maybe on that antidepressants. Maybe the IRS knocked on his door. Maybe his wife said that she was leaving him that morning. You know, I mean, you don't know what happened. But the whole thing about it is people basically have problems like that, and they take it out on people who are driving around. Now, one other thing I did, I want to look at the U.S. sanctions and the trade sanctions that are against Venezuela today, because I want to take a really good look at these people. People are starving to death now in Venezuela. Gibson and Dunn, they have a great slideshow presentation that you can look at online. It's called The Outlook for 2018 U.S. Economic and Trade Sanctions Against Venezuela, March the 13th, 2018, because I'm trying to figure out what the heck just happened. There were multiple people involved, as you can go to the line and see it, and it basically is talking about Venezuela and the foreign policy, and here's what they have done to Venezuela, okay? Nearly 90% of the Venezuelans live in poverty. Food is largely imported in severe scarcity now. It's causing people to starve all over the place. Severe food shortages are affecting the healthcare system. Over 1 million Venezuelans have left the country out of a country of 31 million. 600,000 have fled to Colombia. This is all part of a presentation they're doing. Venezuela's collapsing oil production and processing. Now, here's the big problem. Their refineries are only operating at 43% of capacity. Now, guys, this is with oil prices going up. And you just have to ask yourself, why is this happening? Well, we've been putting sanctions on them through the Obama administration starting on December the 18th, 2014, with Obama, then March the 8th, 2015. And then, of course, Trump has continued his sanctions, in which he basically started sanctioning their banking and their ability for credit. Now, what's interesting about all of this stuff is they're not allowing – I'm going to read this to you. This is from the actual document, from the presidential document. All transactions related to provision of financing for and other dealings with the following by the United States or person within the United States are prohibited. No new debt with maturity of greater than 90 days for the chemical for Citgo. New debt with maturity greater than 30 days or new equity. You can't have that. You'll have to be within 30 days of the government of Venezuela. Bonds issued by the government of Venezuela prior to the effective date of this order. In other words, bonds are done. Dividend payments or other distributions of profits to the government of Venezuela from entity owned or controlled directly, indirectly by the Venezuela. All these are prohibited now. And the purchase directly or indirectly by a United States person or within the United States of securities from the state of Venezuela. Now, he did all this. Now, here's what he did. He basically stopped new debt for Citgo, new debt and new equity for the government of Venezuela. He basically said the bonds issued by the government of Venezuela before between August 2017 and the purchase of securities from the government of Venezuela and the payment of dividends. Now, what that does, that cripples the country as far as cash flow. In other words, what it does is obviously these guys were using the money that was coming in from the sale of their oil to maintain their capacity for the oil production. And when they no longer had the money coming in and they no longer were able to sell bonds or have a system of debt that actually worked, they basically were shut down. Donald Trump and Barack Obama have shut down the entire country, period. Now, think through this for a second. When you do this, this is an act of war, period. This is an act of war. They didn't have to lift one rifle in Venezuela. They didn't have to send any CIA or SEAL teams in or anything else that I know of. All they wanted to do is sanction them through the world courts and through the United States and put on export controls, basically crushing their economy. Their economy is down about half of what it was just a few years ago, and they're not allowing them to come back. Now, why are they doing this? Well, because they want their stuff. The international banking community has done this, and Trump has signed off on it. The international banks have wanted to take over one of the largest oil reserves in the world for Venezuela for a long, long time. And when Chavez was there, he was having none of it. And then he said, I've had enough of you guys. I want to start trading something other than petrodollars, and I want my gold back. You guys have taken my gold. I want my gold back. I want to start something without petrodollars. Suddenly he comes down with cancer, which you can give people, by the way. You can actually give them injections causing cancer, or you can give them whatever and cause cancer. And all of a sudden, now that the guy basically is in a situation, the whole country is in a situation where it's completely and totally crippled. Now, remember, you do not have to fire a single shot to destroy a country now, because the way corporations and companies use credit lines in order to maintain profitability. I've got a friend of mine. Years ago, he ended up with a $10 million credit line for China, who was bringing in products, and he had like anywhere from 30 to 60 to 90 days to pay the credit line off. And he would basically, it would allow him to get the product in inventory, sell it to his people who were buying it from him, and then turn around and generate cash flow from it. The only way he could do that, if short of having $10 million in cash, which he did not have, was to allow the banks to finance the debt. Trump and Obama and the international banking cartels, the IMF, have completely stopped this. Venezuela can't do business, period, on the international markets. That's why their refinery capacities are down so much, because they don't have the cash flow, because their dollar now is worth such little money, to basically finance these guys coming out on these drilling rigs and processing and refining the oil and the fuel, because the international banking cartel wants their stuff. It's the same thing they're going to do, the same thing they're doing to Korea, the same thing they're going to do to Iran if they get a hold of Iran's stuff. This is how they do it. And once they put a central bank into Venezuela or into Iran or into Korea or whatever that's fully Rothschild controlled, they'll be able to turn that country every which way but loose. The United States signed its own demise when it brought the Federal Reserve System in 1913 after Andrew Jackson was so good at getting rid of it in 1932, and then turned right back around and went off the gold standard, because what they did in 1933 when they seized everybody's gold, they were trying to run on the gold standard. And the Rothschilds wanted all the gold, and they knew that the fiat currency couldn't be produced on gold because you're going to run out of gold because of the leverage of 10 to 1, now 40 to 1. So now they basically have taken the gold from the United States, and we're running on the good faith, will, and gestures of the United States people as far as the currency value, because it is the petrodollar, and all of this stuff is hinged on the international criminal Rothschild banking cartel and their complete and total global enslavement of the peoples of this world. Anything you want to add to that, Austin?
Oh, you're exactly right. It's crazy. I mean, what do you see? Because they had a huge power outage about there, down there too, it looks like, this week. And, I mean, the place is having some issues, man. There's no question about it. And I mean, this is kind of what the whole mantra is of what the globalists do, is destabilizing anything and everything they can in order to take it over. Out of chaos breeds order is what they want to do, and this is what they always like to do. And it's crazy enough, I saw this article today too down in Juarez, Mexico. One crazy thing that a lot of people don't realize is how aggressive the entire drug-fueled cartel is becoming in Mexico, and one of the reasons why we need such strict border policies, especially down in the southern states right now. Officials in Juarez are on alert after several video surfaced this week from the Sinaloa cartel aligned gang, which threatened violence against a former ally. The video indicates Los Angeles Asientos, or the AA and Los Mexicos, operating throughout the El Paso-Juarez border area in a video dressed in full tactical gear with numerous rifles. They posed before several vehicles with strobing lights and a huge arsenal to threaten the Los Mexicos. In another video, numerous rifles and handguns are displayed on a tarp while a narrator issues vulgar threats. Juarez now is in the midst of a bloody cartel war with high casualties. Now, a lot of people don't, if you don't look at geography, you don't know this. Juarez, Mexico is right on the border. It's literally right outside of El Paso. It's a border city. Juarez, Mexico now has had 713 homicides this year alone, from January through the end of July. They're averaging now on almost 180 homicides a month in that city. Just that city alone. Not Mexico, just Juarez. Juarez is only 124 square miles. It's a big city, but it's not a monster. To put that in comparison, Dallas, Texas is 385 square miles. Dallas, Texas is more than three times bigger than Juarez, Mexico, and they're pushing close to 200 homicides a month now in just that city alone, which is a border city right outside of El Paso, Texas. It is a full-blown war zone in Juarez, Mexico now. And again, you don't see this on the mainstream media. Nobody talks about what's really going down in Mexico and why we need a very, very strong border patrol presence along the entire border, especially on the western part of Texas, Arizona, right there where El Paso is. This is not a joke. These guys are not playing games. We have given them, through numerous operations, including ATF's Fast and the Furious, thousands upon thousands of machine guns and 50 caliber rifles via ATF. These guys are well-armed, they're well-trained, and they have a substantial arsenal to hold off any type of small military force. These guys do not plan on staying in Mexico. They've originated from central Mexico, a lot of them coming out of Colombia and other northern of South America, and they pushed their way all the way up north. They're not stopping at Juarez, Mexico because it's just another city to take into. They're stopping at Juarez, Mexico because the border is stopping them currently right now. And if we don't hold our wall and prevent these guys from continually pushing people into this country, they're going to get through, and it's going to be an absolute nightmare in this country if these guys get full bridled access to here, which they've done. A lot of them with the MS-13 gang members, basically bringing them under the covers and having people think that they're refugees, which we've talked about numerous times here. But I want to kind of bring that up because a lot of people don't realize how dangerous Juarez is and how close it is to El Paso and how close it is to coming into the United States now, averaging over 40 homicides a week. I mean, these are crazy numbers. Even for a war zone in Iraq, these are crazy numbers, Dad. And nobody wants to talk about it in the mainstream media at all.
Well, because it reinforces our wanting to have a border wall, bud. That's why they don't want to talk about it. I mean, nobody wants to talk about it because, you know, it's true. I mean, and plus, we're not even talking about the tunnels and going across the Rio Grande and cutting holes in fences. I mean, you know, watch that Sicario too. You'll see all that human trafficking. They said there's more money in human trafficking bringing people to the United States than there is in drugs. They just worry about growing the drugs. And if the people don't make it across the border, they die in a hot truck somewhere. You don't have to worry about that. They've already paid you. I mean, it's a horrible movie to watch because of that. But the reality is that's what's going on. And so we have a huge amount of human trafficking going across the borders. And then we have this unbelievable violence down in Juarez, Mexico. The place just needs to be cleaned out. The military needs to go in. The problem is the military is corrupt. I mean, probably half the people in the military are on the take, too, for the drug cartels. So you get a major – and the federales are corrupt. I mean, I remember years ago we had a group of people, and you were with us also, but you were only 2 years old, and we left Cancun, and we were driving in the peninsula of Mexico down there, the Yucatan Peninsula, to an area where there were a bunch of pyramids. I wanted to see them, and we had a minivan, a Volkswagen that we had rented, and we were driving, and I was driving 55 miles an hour, which is a speed limit, and I had like everybody's adult, and remember, nobody else would even rent a van in Mexico, and nobody else would drive the van in Mexico when I got it, because I don't want to be responsible for it. And they were saying, you got to go faster. I said, I'm not going faster. I said, this is Mexico. I'm not a Mexico citizen, okay? These guys like to put people in jail and ransom them. I said, this is just not that. This is not that place. I said, if I was fully armed and I had basically, you know, bodyguards with me and escorts in front and rear with cars with machine guns, I'd go as fast as they wanted to go, but I don't have all that. And so it was an interesting thing because it's just people don't realize how dangerous this was 28 years ago. It's gotten much, much worse. Now, speaking of Mexico, Acapulco has a major trash problem. I mean, the health emergency now is all over the place because of Acapulco's uncollected trash. There's literally thousands and thousands of tons of trash laying around just in Acapulco, and a lot of this is being pushed into the ocean, which is causing a major problem with plastics as far as with whales and dolphins and sea turtles and all this other kind of stuff. You know, the other day I was at a restaurant in Orlando, and I mentioned this the other day on the show. And somebody had one of those six-pack containers at a restaurant, and they were cutting it and basically making it smaller so it would be dolphin-safe and sea turtle-safe. And I looked at the girl, and I said, you know, you can do all that. I said, it's not a bad idea. I said, but here's the problem. I said, really? I said, you know, we don't put our trash in the ocean anymore. It's illegal. We're not allowed to do that. We don't have garbage scows that go out into the ocean and dump stuff. I said, the biggest problem are cruise ships, the older cruise ships that aren't being regulated, and the old other ships that basically don't regulate anything. They dump everything over the side, and basically these small Caribbean countries that dump everything into the ocean. A few years ago, we were in, I guess we were going between Australia and New Zealand. We were on a cruise ship down there. Austin was about 15 years old. This is a funny story. And we bought a kite. And we bought a kite at one of the ports of call. We wanted to sail a kite off the back of the ship. And yeah. We also remember this, we were on a Holland American cruise, and we were going, it's like a two or three day trip to go from Australia to New Zealand with the biggest waves I've ever seen. They were like literally 70 feet high. And then we were going in between the swells on the 600 foot boat, and these waves were huge. So Austin and I got on the back of the boat one day because we were bored, and we launched this kite. And we put it out on about 2,000 feet of string. Now remember, the ship's running 30 miles an hour, so it was pulled tight. And we had it out there, way out there in the horizon, and looking at it thinking, well, this is really be great. But the problem is we didn't have one of those sticks that you roll up. So we were sitting there, we didn't know what to do, so we finally tied it off on the rail, and all of a sudden the first mate of the ship comes running down there and says, what are you doing? And I said, we were flying a kite. And they said, well, we can't do that. We're seeing it on our radar. Remember that, Austin? We're seeing it on the radar, and they want to know what the heck's following the ship. And I said, well, it's a kite. And the guy goes berserk and saying, hey, he was so mad. And I said, dude, just take a chill pill. You got to bring it in. If we dump something in the water, there are all kinds of fines now for doing that. Remember, this was 15 years ago. So the cruise ships have been regulated as far as how to deal with all of that stuff, and they wanted nothing over the side whatsoever. So the kite was brought back in, that kind of stuff. But the reality was this, and in fact, they delivered it to our stateroom. It was pretty interesting. It was like a big brouhaha. But with the whole thing, the thing that's so interesting about all of it is that, you know, it's not the new ships that are doing this. It's not the really, you know, the United States that's doing this. It's China. China and the Caribbean countries. China has garbage scows that go out in the ocean and dump everything because the currents, because of the way the currents come back towards the United States, because of the way the Earth is spinning, it all comes to the east to the western coast. There's an island of garbage out floating off of California. They're saying it's from Fukushima, but a lot of it's from China. That's out there that has all of this plastic in it that's killing a lot of the sea life. Not to mention the radiation from Fukushima. So. All of our good intentions in the United States is trying to keep clean air. And so we get people like China on board in these Caribbean islands, which have this stuff wash up on their beaches all the time because they just throw the stuff out in the ocean. And so we get these people on board. We're not going to stop the killing of these turtles or these dolphins or these whales or these other types of mammals in the water, Austin, because it's systemic. It's that bad because of these countries doing this. And that's why I was so happy when Donald Trump pulled us out of that climate accord in Europe when he took office, because it ain't the United States. You know, these people are such liars. I have been to China. I have walked in China and watched everybody coughing and hacking, some people walking around wearing double can respirator masks, other walking around having handkerchiefs with water on them. They told us if you're going to go into town for any length of time, take a wet washcloth with you and breathe through it. They told us that from the cruise ship. Because it was that bad. And there were places you literally couldn't see 200 yards. It was like a fog bank. We rolled into China. We came into Shanghai, and about 50 miles offshore, we hit the sea fog. I mean, it was just white, just opaque. You walked out on your deck, couldn't see anything. And finally, you know, the front deck said, well, many of you think that they've pronounced it to the room. They said, try to stay inside right now. Many of you think this is sea fog from the cold air and the water touching each other and all that and the warm air. This is not. This is pollution coming off the mainland of China. 50 miles out into the ocean. 50 miles. Think about that for a second. And we went through this stuff for hours upon hours upon hours. And finally we got to the shore to Shanghai. We parted with the boat, got there. And it was almost impossible to breathe because of the factories. Because remember, they don't put scrubbers on their smokestacks with coal generating plants. They burn this dirty coal. And there's no sweat. See, we learned a long time ago in the United States to use wet scrubbers. In other words, the smoke goes through a bunch of brushes that are going back and forth. They're wet. And so it causes the dirt in the water, the smoke, to basically pour out, and it's put into a settling pond, but it doesn't get into the atmosphere. They don't do that there. All that stuff goes up into the air. So when I see these companies trying to be green in the United States and wanting to not produce a plastic tub or a plastic this or a plastic that and use cardboard boxes that are recyclable because they want to save the turtles, great, I'm happy for them. It ain't going to work until we get these other countries on board. Because remember, our stuff is recycled in the United States, much of the plastics and much of the paper. These other countries don't do that, Austin. I remember I was at one place, I forgot, it was the San Blas Islands. Don't ever go there. Don't ever go there. I mean, they eat cats there. Kid you not, they eat kittens and cats. And we went there, and the entire shores were covered in plastic and trash. This is in the Caribbean, off the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, off the coast of Panama. So there's certain places that you just need to avoid, and the Caribbean's turning into that, Austin. What do you think?
It is. It's crazy because, like you said, a lot of people don't realize the amount of pollution that China puts out, and nobody wants to address it whatsoever. And it's just, I mean, it is bad. And, you know, I didn't go over there with you guys on that trip, but I've seen the photos, and it's crazy. I mean, you can click just, I mean, go on a search engine and type China pollution. And I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, remember when they had the Olympics and all that, they had to shut down vehicles for days and days on end. Shut down the whole city. No vehicles, no transit, nothing. People had to ride bicycles and walk. So they were trying to clean the air out enough to basically have an Olympic competition over there because they couldn't clean it out. I mean, that's what they deal with on a regular basis. Also, too, in other news, I thought this was nice to hear because we finally actually see, of course it would be in Texas, but we finally actually see some ramifications for these hardcore leftists that think it's okay to assault people simply for being supportive of our president. And Dad and I talked yesterday, if you listen to the show, it's so ironic how just 2 years ago, if you said anything critical about President Obama, if you didn't agree with President Obama, if you didn't basically blindly take everything he said as gospel, you were considered a racist to not agree with our president. Now it's the polar opposite, where if you even wear a hat that supports our president, or if you even say you voted for Trump, you may be inclined to get in a fight or an altercation now. Well, if you guys remember the Whataburger incident, with the Kino Jimenez in July, the 30-year-old guy who assaulted a teenage boy at a San Antonio Whataburger now, he has now been indicted for felony battery for basically hitting the kid or grabbing the hat off the kid, slinging the drink and hitting him in the face with his drink, and then using all types of horrible expletives in the 16-year-old boy's face because he was an adult and this kid was a minor. So it's basically he's getting felony battery on a minor, which, good, I'm glad. The fact that a 30-year-old grown man can't control himself enough and is so enraged that he thinks he needs to go over and assault a boy who's eating dinner, doing nothing wrong. Literally, you see the video. He's literally sitting there eating dinner, trying to enjoy his burger unmolested on his way, and this guy comes over, rips the hat off of him, throws the drink in his face, and begins to belittle him and cuss him, and just, I mean, repeatedly in public. And this guy needs to get felony charges. I really, really hope they stick and hope the jury finds him guilty, because these are the type of incidences that cannot go unpunished, especially when you have somebody that is sitting there doing nothing but minding their own business and simply supporting our president with a hat. And like I said, the irony of it is, if a situation like this occurred before, oh, dude, if you would have had an individual that was basically a skinhead or white supremacist, like the term everybody likes to use now all the time, walk over to basically a Hispanic or black individual with an Obama hat on and rips the hat off of him and throws the drink in their face and calls them all these racist slurs and tells them they're basically a bigot and a racist for supporting our president, he would not just be getting felony battery charges, he'd be getting hate crimes, he'd be getting all types of indecent, you know, hate words as far as racial slur charges. Anything you could possibly come up with them, they would find to charge him with because of that incident. So I am glad to see that this guy has been indicted now, Dad. I just thought it was ironic that he thought he was so above the law with his leftist mentality that he was going to get away with this, especially in Texas.
Well, you know, but I hate bullies. I mean, I always have.
Me too.
You know, bullies are just something that, I mean, I still remember that one time we were driving by the park in Auburndale, and some bully was beating some kid up, and they were both like 16 years old, and one kid was on the ground just getting the crap punched out of him. And I remember I stopped the truck, and you jumped out and ran over there, and the kid looked at you and took one look at you. I think you were weighing about 220 then. And you looked at him and said, dude, you need to get off, and that's enough. And the guy looked at you and just kind of froze, jumped up and ran away. And the other kid was like so grateful. I mean, it's just enough of this, man. I can't stand it when somebody's down and somebody's pounding on them, because there's no point in that. I mean, just it's like Grady Judd said, just leave people alone. Just leave them alone. You know, if a kid's wearing a hat, it's okay. You don't like the hat, so what? Just put yourself on a Gay Canyon hat and be done with it. I support the Gay Canyon and his tranny wife. I love them both. They're my best friends. And just walk around with a Gay Canyon shirt on. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to walk up to you and slap you upside the head and throw a drink in your face if you're supporting the Gay Canyon. So just leave it be. Just leave it be. By the way, new dress code for California. Must cover genitals, buttocks, and nipples. So I guess if you wear a string bikini on the top and cover your nipples up with some pasties, I guess, they're going to be okay with that. That's how the dress code has basically gone to now, where they can wear whatever they want as long as it covers their genitals, their buttocks, and their nipples with opaque material and doesn't feature images or language depicting violence, drugs, alcohol, hate speech, profanity, and or pornography on their clothes. Decision is being hailed as feminist. Parenting Guy site Scary Mommy, for example, called it feminist AF for seeking to diminish body shaming and discrimination against girls. I don't even know what this means, Austin. I guess it's gotten to the point where if you want to dress as provocatively as you want, if you want to come in there and whatever, and as long as you're keeping your nipples covered and your buttocks covered and your genitalia covered, you can show your bare midriff or whatever. I mean, good grief. I mean, here's the problem with you. And guys, let me stop for a second for this. You're a 15-year-old guy, 16-year-old guy. All you think about are girls. That's about it. About every 7 or 8 seconds you think about girls again because of the testosterone, because you're going to pubescence. Unless you're a snowflake, then you probably are not thinking about much of anything because you've been basically chemically castrated and neutered. But a normal guy is going to be thinking about this all the time. So now you got a girl prancing into the classroom dressed like this. And now you're supposed to pay attention to what the teacher's saying? Really? Really, guys? Really? I'm not going to hear a word if I'm 16 years old that's coming out of that teacher's mouth. All I'm going to be doing is staring at this person dressed like this if she's hot. Now she's hot. Now, if she weighs 1,000 pounds, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably run out of the room screaming, I guess. I don't know. But the point is, if this is so ridiculous that the school systems are now saying that you can basically dress like a hooker if you want and it's okay and everybody's still supposed to pay attention to the teachers, I can't imagine the discipline problems that these people are having in these classrooms with this type of allowance. What do you think, son?
No, well, again, it's all about breaking down the morals and ethics as the younger generation, and that's what they've been doing so well now with the media and the music and YouTube and everything, as far as trying to depict everything at its lowest form of morality. And that's what they've done to school systems now, too. That's why they've taken prayer out of the schools. They've taken Christ. They've taken any type of biblical teaching whatsoever, and they've basically shoved Common Core down to everybody's throat and told everybody, hey, if you want to be a girl or a dude or an it or a Z or whatever other term you want to come up with, you can do that. You can be whatever you want to be any day you want to be it. And this is all part of that entire ideology, so it doesn't surprise me at all. Good news, it looks like, is Catholics are now starting to call for the investigation and resignation of Pope Francis after you guys have seen a lot of these allegations on the stuff that's happened with the sex scandal in the Catholic Church. growing number of American Catholics are calling for investigation into the allegations that Pope Francis blatantly ignored Cardinal Theodore McCarrick's record of sexually abusing priests, seminaries, lay people, and minors. Some Catholics are even calling for the Pope to resign. The calls from the Catholic bishops, organizations, and media outlets for Pope Francis to be investigated or resign have come from a former Vatican ambassador to the United States, Carlo Maria Vago, released an 11-page affidavit Saturday alleging that Pope Francis blatantly turned a blind eye to McCarrick's behavior. They said the affidavit specifically claimed that Pope Francis lifted Pope Benedict's sanctions on the disgraceful cardinal imposed between 09 and 10 that forbade him from interacting in the public in official capacity, and they alleged Francis did this despite knowing of the serious allegations against McCarrick. Other bishops throughout the U.S. have soon followed, with bishops from Oklahoma, Texas, Wisconsin, and California releasing statements calling for investigation into the Pope. Pope Francis has been, in my opinion, one of the worst popes that I've ever seen. I'm not Catholic, but from a lot of the things that have spewed out of his mouth, especially borderline blasphemy, and the statements he's made have been downright horrific. So I really, really hope they get him to resign, because this guy is just nothing but a globalist stooge that's doing New World Order bidding, and it's sad to see him in that position, but it doesn't surprise me. So I really hope that they can get him out of there, Dan.
I do too, Austin. The problem with the Pope and the problem with the Catholics in general is a lot of people make him a lot higher of an individual than he is. Catholics believe a lot of things about the Pope, including his ability to speak, or so speak, infallibly, and that his role is that of an authoritative representative of God. Basically, they call him also the Vicar of Christ. They believe a lot of things about the Pope that Protestants and others disagree with, but they don't believe he's God. Official doctrinal statements do not include such a thing, as historically they have never believed any of that, but they believe he can be infallible for what he does. And, you know, the problem with this is the Catholic Pope, until this last one, pretty much all of them stayed in office until they died. And the last one basically resigned because of, I believe, a pedophilia scandal. And sadly, we have a lot of people, Austin, out there who are Catholics, and I'm going to stick up for just a minute, who are good, God-fearing Catholics, who I believe are born-again Christians because of what they've prayed and what they've studied and the relationship they have with God. I'm not going to be that guy who judges anybody because of what they say and how they act. But then you also have Catholics who are the zealots. And basically, if you don't agree with everything they say, you're a heretic. And that means you're not going along with established doctrine of the Catholic Church for thousands of years, or over 1,000 years. And so they're not willing to flex on this, and they're not willing to see that just maybe the Pope should be investigated for covering up these child abuse charges, and they don't want to look at the influence of the mafia and the influence of the Masonic lodges in the Catholic Church, and they don't really want to take a look at the Vatican Bank and its use by the CIA to run drug money and to launder drug money. I mean, they don't want to see that because it's their church. And the same thing is true. I mean, we got our own problems, with the Southern Baptist churches and what they believe, and we have our own problems with the Lutheran churches and what they believe, and we certainly have that with the Methodist churches and all the things they're doing with, and the Episcopals and all the stuff they're doing as far as ordaining gay priests. I mean, we've got a major problem in a lot of the religions because we're not teaching Bible-based Christianity or Catholicism or Lutheranism or Protestantism again. We're not doing that. We're just teaching whatever their itchy ears want to hear, and it's no good for any denomination to do that. And quite frankly, the Catholic Church really got messed up back in the 60s when they changed a lot of the things they were doing and how they were actually acting and doing things in church. And I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to get a bunch of Catholics all hacked off. But the reality is this, you've got a deep infiltration into the Catholic Church of people who aren't Christians with the hierarchy. And so it's causing a lot of problems, including all of this pedophilia. I mean, I can't believe for one second that somebody that rapes a little boy, Austin, little 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10-year-old little boy is a Christian. I don't believe that for one second. And with up to 50% of the priests now, they're coming out or saying they're basically, are homosexuals, and a lot of them are pedophiles, and they were introduced to pedophilia when they were altar boys by the other priests, and it's been ongoing and doing all of this. It's weird. And quite frankly, nowhere in the Bible does it say that you can't be a minister of the gospel or a priest and not be married. And to me, I look at it like this. If the Catholic Church changed anything they wanted to change, if the priest wanted to be married and have a wife with whom they could have relationships with and be a heterosexual, it would be, I think, a lot better for everybody, because that's the Protestants have learned to do that a long, long time ago when they left the Catholic Church. It simply isn't necessary. By the way, teen Xanax abuse is surging. This is a big story. You know, right now in Baltimore, teen drug use during the summer often goes unnoticed. It's when school starts up and students not off in class, exchange pills in the hallways, and failed tests as the truth becomes apparent. This school year, addiction specialists say they're expecting an onslaught of teens addicted to Xanax and other sedatives in a class of anti-anxiety drugs known as benzodiazepines. We've covered this many times on the show. Many teens view Xanax as a safer, more plentiful alternative to prescription opioids and heroin with similar euphoric effects. But addiction experts warn that the pills kids are taking, often found in their parents' or their grandparents' medicine cabinets, can be just as deadly as opioids, especially when taken in combination with other drugs and or alcohol. And Xanax is a much harder habit to kick. Some say harder than heroin, with side effects including death of withdrawal. So guys, yep, be really, really, really careful with your children. This is a really good article. You can read it. It's by Christine Vestal, V-E-S-T-A-L. Teen Xanax abuse is surging. And read it and think through this. If you have medications that you're taking or that you're not taking any longer, that you have in your refrigerator, just flush them. Just flush them. Just dump them in the water or put them in the trash, put them through a grinder, whatever you want to do and get rid of them and get them out of the house so the kids aren't going to have access to it. That's really, really, really important because, guys, a lot of kids start on drugs because they start taking their parents' prescription because they're curious. Hey, my mom and dad take it. It can't be that bad. I'm going to try it. And they get hooked on these opioids. I mean, just be careful with this stuff. I mean, if you're going to be using these things or if you've got a bad back injury or whatever, keep it locked up. If you've got children at home or grandchildren running around, just get you one of those little small boxes that you can lock up, you know, with maybe a fingerprint it'll open or whatever, and just keep your junk in there and don't let the kids have access to it. It's a whole lot safer for them. It's going to be a whole lot better for your family in the long run, I promise you. And guys, Xanax is one of those. If you're on it, be very careful coming off of it. And if you've never taken it, don't ever let your doctor put you on that drug. That's one of the absolute worst ones you could ever go on as far as withdrawal, trying to come off of it. Austin, I've got friends who are still taking those in their 30s, started taking them in high school, can't get off of them. And you just really need to avoid those types of drugs like they're the plague. Austin, what do you think?
You absolutely, man. Xanax, and there's basically a sedative, and it's a class of anti-anxiety drug, and Xanax is just the main name brand. There's like benzodiazepines as far as the main base is what they are, but there's clozapine, all these different names. When it comes down to it, they're all anti-anxiety drugs. The issue with these drugs is that they become so physically and mentally addictive because the withdrawal time on them, if you do actually come off of them under a doctor's order or under a doctor's watch, opiate withdrawal is very severe for about 2 to 3 days. Most opiate withdrawals doesn't last more than a week, but there's about 2 to 3 days that are absolutely brutal with opiate withdrawal. Once you push through that, you're usually pretty good as long as you don't relapse and go back on it. Xanax is complete opposite. Xanax can take months upon months upon months to withdraw from because the way it builds up in the system, unlike opiates. Opiate usually, most opiates half-life are no more than much about 12 hours. So it clears out of your system fairly quick. Xanax builds in the system, and the problem is Xanax is one of the only prescription drugs that you can actually die from during withdrawal. A lot of people say that about opiates. Opiates cannot physically kill you from withdrawing from them. Now, you can have severe diarrhea and vomiting and become incredibly dehydrated and essentially die from dehydration after 3 or 4 days of not drinking any water from having severe withdrawal. That can happen. However, Xanax and benzodiazepines can actually kill you from the withdrawal standpoint simply on that alone. It's a scary, scary drug to be on. As Dad said, if you've never taken this stuff, do not start taking it. We have the Serenex Stress Control, which is a really, really good natural helper to manage stress and to manage cortisol and to manage basically anxiety from a natural standpoint. Using these drugs, in my opinion, 99.9% of the time, they should not be used at all. There's very few times that I've ever seen anybody that actually needs to be on a drug like this. The issue with Xanax is, again, like many other pharmaceutical drugs, Xanax was never designed to be taken at a high-dose, long-term drug. Xanax was originally prescribed for people that had very, very bad anxiety panic attacks, like dangerous panic attacks. It was a fast product that could be brought into the system, usually rapidly, and it would calm down the panic attacks, and usually they would not need them again for 3 or 4 days, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, you know, 5 weeks. so forth. And if they had another severe panic attack, they could take another fast dissolving tab. Well, when Xanax came out with what was called the XR tablet, is extended release, and it was even higher dosage to allow people that were having issues with panic attacks to take one pill and allow it to build in the system for like 24 hours. They only needed one. The problem with this, and again, the pharmaceutical companies knew this. They knew how addictive it was. They knew how hard the withdrawal was. They didn't care. They found that it would be much more profitable to get people on these long, controlled release benzodiazepines so they would take them long term and would not be able to come off of them, instead of using these rapid release benzos to essentially help mitigate a massive panic attack and then have it clear the system within a few hours. This is how it started. This is how it's done. They've done this with the statin drugs. They did it with the opiates, with OxyContin. They do it all the time. They do it to get people on them so they're lifelong slaves to the pharmaceutical industrial complex. So my dad said, if you're not on this stuff, do your absolute best not to take it. Get second and third opinions, and do, by all means, if you ever go to the doctor and they write you a script for something, do some research on it, guys. Look at the side effects of this stuff. It's posted online. They legally have to tell you what it does to you. And there's so many people I've talked to in the office where they've called in and they say, I started on this and I started on this and I didn't know my doctor told me to take it, so I started taking it. Now I feel horrible. Did you look up any of the symptoms on it? Oh, yeah. Well, it said all the stuff that's happened to me now was probably going to happen if I took the drug. There's your sign. There it is. It was right there. So just be weary of that, guys, and make sure, like I said, if you haven't started taking the stuff, there's a lot of natural stuff we have, like the cortisol buster, the Serenex stress control. Heck, even the adrenal support I've talked to some people can help out getting adrenals ramped back up in a healthy manner so it can manage healthy stress levels. But I just want to kind of add that extra part in there, Deb.
Well, we have a healthy brain formula, too. I mean, you know, if you give your brain the nutrients that it needs, it starts acting right. I mean,
magnesium
sounds
too.
Weird, doesn't it? It's like putting oil in your gasoline to try to run it to your car. It'll maybe run for a bit, but it's not going to act right. Same thing if you don't have enough octane in the gas, it's not going to run right. Your brain needs a certain percentage of nutrients, a certain combination of nutrients that make it act right and have the right production of serotonin and other types of dopamine, other types of things. And so if you don't have that in there, it's hard for the brain to produce those feel-good chemicals, which in turn make you have all kinds of anxiety issues and feel down and depressed. I mean, I know the 5-HTP, the cod liver oil, the B complex, all those things work great keeping your brain healthy. By the way, kids, I guess the reason they're using a lot of Xanax now, which they see more than ever, is that more than 200,000 teens had plastic surgery last year, and social media had a lot to do with it. This is from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. Kids are going in now, you know, and they've got a nose they want fixed, or they want ears that want to be fixed, or they like to have other things done or changed, or have, you know, breast reductions or breast enlargements or all lips enlargements. Oh, you know, this whole list goes on and on and on. I mean, okay. Let me stop for 1 second. Here's the thing. If a kid has ears that stick out, all right, and it's going to cost you a couple grand to get those fixed, and the kid's really conscious of it and they're really embarrassed about it, whatever. Who cares? If the kid has a nose the size of a bread loaf, you might want to get it cropped down a little bit or whatever. But all of these minor cosmetic things that kids are doing is complete and total waste of time. And, you know, and here's the problem. When you start messing with a face that's still growing and it hasn't finished growing, you can really mess up the final looks of that person, because that body's going to continue to grow after the cosmetic surgery. So you don't know what's going to happen. So it's just not worth it. And, you know, I've had friends, parents that have bought their daughter's breast enlargement, you know, when they're 17, 18 years of age for high school graduation presents. And every time that kind of stuff happens, it always goes sideways. It has all kinds of unseen consequences that the parents never saw coming. And it's just something that, you know, God made us look a certain way. And bar some type of horrible genetic abnormality, you kind of just need to leave things alone as far as I'm concerned. Because I'm telling you guys, you know, some of these plastic surgeons that are quacks, and there's a bunch of quacks that are plastic surgeons, and they can mess you up. Don't believe that? Just Google horrible plastic surgeries that have gone terribly wrong, okay? And you will get an eyeful of it, of what can happen if you don't have the right surgeon. So be very, very careful with that. Like I said, if it's a genetic anomaly or abnormality that's absolutely horrible and you got to get it fixed, that's one thing. Otherwise, leave it all alone. It just doesn't make any difference. Guys, thank you so much for listening today. We're going to be on with Hagman tonight, so you guys stay tuned for that. I appreciate you. Got to pray for you again today. Love you guys. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for telling all your friends about us. Our show is growing so fast. We appreciate it so much. God bless you. I appreciate you. Austin, I'll do the write-up, and I'll talk to you guys tonight. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. We got a great show planned for you guys tonight. Got a lot of different articles, some topics, some different health stuff that we're going to be going over with the Hagmans. It's always a blessing to be on their show. I always enjoy being on it, as always. And so if you guys need anything, be sure to check out the website. Doing a really big special right now on a product that we have a lot of decent amount, a lot of inventory in, and we're going to move some of it right now because it's been such a big product over the years, and it's so important because this is one of those omega-3 fats that's really good for the brain, really good for the eyesight. That's one big factor that I've heard so many people talk about with the Himla is the eyesight. We're pretty much selling the product right now, right above our cost, and we're doing that pretty much to help everybody out. A lot of people have been requesting this product. And we put it on the front page of the website for over 40% off right now. Huge sale. One of the biggest sales we've ever done before. And we want everybody to have the ability to try this. The end of the summer, you know, everybody needs to get ramped back up for school. Kids can take this. I've had a lot of adolescents to take Himla, even anybody. I mean, it's a really, really good product because it's a water and fat-soluble phospholipid. So it is one of the only omega-3 fats that can pass through the blood-brain barrier. So it's really good for mental acuity and people that are having issues with depression or having issues with stress and anxieties we were just talking about earlier. Omega-3 fats are crucial in keeping those dialed in into the brain and making sure it has enough of these omega-3 fats, because the brain member essentially is almost made of all fat, and it uses omega-3 fats like fuel. Like you use gas in your car, your brain uses omega-3 fats in the brain as fuel. That's why it's so important to have these regularly in your diet, but most people, their diets lack omega-3 fats, no doubt about it. And so when you deal with a krill oil like this, the Antarctic krill oil we use, and we use a patented dry ice technology to extract it, so there's no solvents, there's no chemicals, nothing whatsoever, you produce a really pure, highly absorbable phospholipid omega-3 fat, which is really good. So it's going to be on sale probably for a short time, very short time. With this sale on it, I have a pretty strong feeling we're going to sell out of the inventory very quickly. And but I wanted to put it on the front page, and I wanted to give you guys the first shot at it, because I will be promoting it on the Hagman show tonight. I know this is a very popular product with Doug Hagman, so he's going to be happy about that as well. So be sure to check it out on the website, healthmasters.com. The Body Balance Himla, and of course be sure to check out the product of the week, the Probiotic DF, and also the other products that are pushing for sale right now on Product of the Week, like our Beef Jerky, our Ultimate Multiple Chewable, our Thyroid Support, and many other ones. So we appreciate you guys, we love you. I'm going to go get prepped for the Hagman show after I get a quick workout in, and we'll talk to you guys tonight, and after that have an awesome weekend, and have a very safe, blessed Labor Day. You guys have an awesome night.